Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 246. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Woodway, for bringing this episode to you for free. Only partner with companies that I believe in, the people I trust, and Woodway by far is the best treadmill in the market and has gone into every weight room that I've had. Just a phenomenal company, innovative, and great people. This week, I'm joined by Matt Durant. Matt's the head strength coach at Laverne University in California, Ontario, California. Learned that a couple weeks ago. And he was also the 2018 NSPA Strength Coach of the Year. Man, I got a chance to hang out with him recently, speaking at a clinic out there. Just a great guy, great dad, and building a phenomenal program out there. So appreciate you coming on, man.
Coach, thank you. Like I told you, I've been listening to your podcast for years. It's really cool to be on one.
No, it's awesome, brother. Well, you've done a little bit of everything. You worked with a buddy of ours, Dos Remedios at College of the Canyons. But which stop in your journey best defines you as a coach? I mean, where did you feel like you really kind of grew up as that coach and the person that you are today?
Well, I tell you what, when I first started coaching back in 1998, my first introduction to Coach Dos, who is, listen, that's my guy. Like, that is, they have that saying that everything you learned in life, you learned in kindergarten. Well, everything I learned in this profession, I learned from Coach Dos. So,
yeah, sure, right?
I started coaching around him, and I was a very young coach who thought he knew everything, and I was going to change the world and this and that. And when I got around Coach, I learned very quickly that my ideas were not the right ideas, because watching him coach, watching him go about his daily business, the way he ran his life, I learned so much about how to work with athletes. And I don't care if you're talking about male or female. I, to this day, still reference my 1998 first year of coaching and how much I learned from him, and then growing every year after that. Between my first year and my second year, I learned so much about coaching, and I transitioned into kind of what I am today in terms of my philosophy and everything else. But that first year of coaching, that some of the guys I got to work with and the experiences of being at a community college and, recruiting high school kids and then having four-year guys come in and get them out, you really do get to see both sides of it.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Well, we've had Dos on the show before, and he's a really good friend of mine. And, when I had him on the show, and I encourage everybody to go back and watch that one, he was one of the most creative people that I've ever been around, and just does it the right way. And so, fantastic person, fantastic guy. But I could definitely recognize that would be a huge learning experience. You went from there, you started the program at Laverne, and you've created from scratch, and you don't do that without making a bunch of mistakes along the way. Huh. What's one of the biggest mistakes you made and how you learned from it?
Well, Coach, I tell you what. When I started Laverne, and you'll appreciate this because anyone that's read your book knows your path, that I made $5,000 my first year of being a college training coach. I had two platforms, 20 pieces of selectorized equipment. The next year, I got 7 platforms, and I got rid of 12 pieces of that equipment to where I am now having 16 platforms. And as much stuff, if not more, than anyone else in Division III across the country in terms of things to use, tools to use. The biggest mistake I used was where I appropriated all of my energy. It was misguided a lot of times. And I think as a young coach, you think you need to put all your energy here. But as you get older, the wiser knows how and when to put the energy and where to put it. Letting little things bug you when you forget about the big picture sometimes. And so now I am able to put my focus in different places. I had two really wise old guys on campus that sat me down one day and said, you're going to burn yourself out. And I said, you guys are insane. There's no way. There's no way I'll burn myself out. Now, being a single dad of two boys, who said this? God, a couple years ago, Rob Rogers said this. He goes, you know, do you know anybody that's actually retired as a college strength coach? And I thought to myself, no, like I really don't know anybody that's retired. And so I now look back on that and go, I got to have my sanity to keep myself going all the time. And you talked about this in your book too, but like you can have all this, all these people around you, interns, graduate assistants and what have you, but you have to let them go coach. And for no other reason, that's how they develop. But you're also learning how to release some things to them so you don't feel like you have to do every single thing.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I actually asked that question, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago now at a NSCA conference. I was leading a round table. It was, you know, 400 people in the room, and asked that question, and you know, only three people raised their hand as to who had actually knew strength coaches that retired being strength coaches. And you know, that was a really, I mean, it was a wake up call for me. I think it was a wake up call for a lot of people in the room, and really, you know, set me down a path that I'm currently on where it's, you know, I feel like I'm doing strength and conditioning on my own terms. And, but you're right. Managing your time, managing time, people and resources is that management piece of the book. That's the trick. That's the trick. You don't become a head strength coach. You don't become a strength coach, in my opinion, until you're a head strength coach sitting in that chair. And culture and logistics and, you know, everything runs through you. And it's easy to write the set reps. That's the easy part, getting people to buy into you and believe in you and the program. That's the hard part. So I can feel your pain there. When you started the program, I would imagine, you know, you alluded to it already, that it was much different than it, you know, at the beginning than it is now. You know, what were some of the biggest challenges walking into a situation that never had a strength coach before?
Well, Coach, let me take the question and I'm going to spin it. If you walked into University of Georgia tomorrow as the strength coach for the Olympic side, you could walk into those coaches and go, okay, you've had a strength coach before. When do you guys want to lift? What have you done? You know, you're going to run through your litany of questions to ask them.
Right.
When I got to Laverne, nobody had ever had a strength coach. Nobody knew how to use me. Nobody knew how to actually come up with a plan for when the teams were going to come in and how often and so forth. And the Division III rules at the time back in 2001 were open-ended. And they're left to interpretation.
Right.
You guys at the Division I level, when I say you guys, you know, Coach, when you were at Tennessee and you and I talked about this, you got 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
Theoretically speaking, I'm not under an hour rule. My kids sign up for weight training classes. So if the weight class ran 3 hours, it ran 3 hours. But
right.
The point is, it's educating the coaches and letting them know what my plan is, how I'm going to work it, what we can do in a year-round progression for their athletes. I am up to now 21 different sport coaches in 9 years that have come through the place. Wow. And of all those coaches that have come through, only a handful of them, when I say handful, four of those coaches have come in with prior experience working with a college strength coach. So now you're having to educate. And a lot of times when a coach comes in, you go through a new recruiting class. Well, those athletes don't really know. And so you're all having a lot of this turnover. So it's me sitting down and really trying to educate them on what I can do for them and how I can enhance their program. And Coach McKeever, you know this, it takes time. Yep. It takes time.
Yeah, I think you made a great point there with, you know, so sometimes people will look at that and say, well, you know, you don't have any bad habits to break. You don't have any bad, you know, this, that, or the other to kind of to address when you walk into a situation. But sometimes not, you know, people never having experience working with a strength coach is just every bit as challenging in that education process. What were some of the things that you did early when you walked into a situation? Because I think a lot of coaches walk into that where, you know, X team doesn't work with the strength staff, or they didn't want to, or this, that, or the other. What were some of the things you did early to get them to buy into you and to buy into the program?
Man, that was a long time ago. It became a sitting down and go, what do you want from me?
Right.
Yeah, you had on a while ago, you had on the Arizona baseball guy. And you guys talked about how little mine, little yours, you got to give a little to get a little.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some things that I'm not exact. It's not my favorite thing to do. Well, I'm going to do it. So they see me do it. And then after a while, what happens? They go, okay, well, you're doing a good job. You go ahead and run it. You go ahead and take care of it yourself. I've been at Luverne for over 16 years now. So when a new coach comes in and they ask the other coaches, hey, what's up with the weight room? Most of our coaches that work with me go, oh, it's, hey, just go talk to Durant. He'll take care of it. All you have to do is let him know what time you want to lift, so on and so forth. He'll work with you. I am the second longest tenured coach at the college, myself and the head baseball coach, who's also our interim athletic director. And so he and I have an unbelievable relationship together. I can go in, we're very frank and honest. And yesterday the conversation was, hey, I want to do this different with my day one and day two starter. You got to coach him all over it. He knows exactly what to tell me, and he knows that I'm going to turn around and go get it done. Well, when you have that with him and other coaches, it is a little bit easier now after 16 years. But back then, it's coaches not knowing, you know, schedules, their kids' schedules, or, hey, so-and-so is going to miss because of this and this and this. Okay, right. Coach, when are we going to make it up? Yeah, I don't know. And it was just, you kind of have to overly communicate at times, which you don't want to spend a lot of time always walking to a head coach's office because you want to be training the athletes and being around the kids. But right. I had to do a lot of going in and talking to the coaches and just listening to them. And I think discipline was the hardest thing because the minute, you know, if a kid's late, and back then, let's be honest, in the early 2000s, late 90s, if a kid's late, you run them.
Right.
Nowadays, you can't run kids if they're late. So it's totally different. I had the kids clean the weight room. I tell them they're doing free work study for me. But back then, if a kid was late to a lift, I had to go tell the coach would be like, oh, well, it's not a big deal. I'm like, well, if they were late for your practice. So you're having to have these conversations with coaches, and that got a little frustrating and daunting at times.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I always talk about, meat and potatoes, you know, and then the sugar and spice. I mean, you gotta make sure that your program has the meat and potatoes in it, that this is the non-negotiables. But then the sugar and spice, like if a coach wants to throw an exercise in, who cares? You know, if it's not going to hurt the kid, or, you know, if it's maybe starting 15 minutes later, or 15 minutes early, earlier, sometimes you give a little bit to get a lot, like you said. But I think, you know, one thing that I always kind of deal with coaches, and I'm managing 34 coaches now, and with my current role, is no coach is going to give you the keys to the kingdom without you having built a little bit of trust with them.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
You know, and that's the thing is, I mean, we're, you know, we have to lead up and lead down as strength coaches, you know, and so many times when we're dealing with our own staff and with our athletes, we're so focused on leading down that we turn around and we get pissed off when an athletic director or a head coach comes in and tells us what to do, you know, and we got to have, it can't have it both ways. We got to be able to lead up and be a good role player for the team, but then also be able to get things done and communicate and get buy-in from the coaching staff, from the administration, boosters, the whole deal.
You know, I having a dad that was a lifelong Marine, a career Marine, and I look at it kind of like the military aspect where your job is to teach your job to those below you. So my job is to teach everything to my assistants and my interns. At the same time, I'm going to have been a general or whoever. And then all of a sudden now I have to take that in. And you kind of, we say this lovingly, you can't be grumpy. You don't have that option because you are dealing with so many people going up and down the chain of command that you find yourself going, okay, I can hear 8 bad pieces of information, whether it's athletes missing lifts or coaches dealing with this or that, or your assistants, and you have to take it all in stride and go, okay, awesome. Let's move forward. It's right, not that right. big of a deal. And honestly, coach, you've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this almost 20 years. It's not that big of a deal. Mm-mm. It's always going to be okay at the end of the day. Right. It really is.
That's right. Yeah. It's not, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I think, with these, when you're in a situation like yours where, I mean, there's scheduling, it's a little bit easier at the D1 level or, you know, because you got revenue sports and you got non-revenue sports, you know, you got sports like football that bring money into the university. And then you got some Olympic sports that, you know, they don't bring any money in, no gate admissions or anything like that. I would imagine at the D3 level, there's for the most part, all the programs bring in about the same amount of money, other than tuition and numbers are probably what rule the roost there. How do you go about setting the schedule? You know, if 20 teams, you know, all 21 teams come to you and say, I want to lift at 4 o'clock, how do you decide who gets that priority?
So what we do is in-season teams typically have their pick. So like almost all my in-season sports lift before practice, which is awesome. As a strength coach, if you get a team after practice, it's really hard to get anything out of them. You're almost just managing their time in the weight room.
Right.
Then I hate to say this, but because they're the biggest sport, football. So football, they lift at different group times based on their classes in season. Out of season, we go from 5:30 to 7:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Because if not, there's no way I could do what I need to do all day.
Yep.
Our weight room is also doubled for the students and the faculty on campus. So I can't close it from 7 to noon to get multiple groups throughout the day. I'm also very blessed to have a lot of ex-athletes that are now in the profession that they want to do it. They come back and they intern, they help. So this morning I had 8 people in here helping me. I had football from 5:30 to 6:30. 6:30 track comes in to lift. Today is Division III Student Athlete Appreciation Day. So both basketball teams came in at 6:30. And then my volleyball team came in at 8 o'clock after they did their non-traditional practice season. So it allowed us to just kind of flow and roll through the morning. So, and on a side note, I get to get dunked in the dunk tank today. All the athletes want to dunk me. Yeah. So
I've made that mistake before too, playing dodgeball or whatever. You know, you go out there, you play dodgeball, you take you go coaches versus athletes, and all of a sudden you whistle and you got 20 dodgeballs coming right at you.
The coach, you're the most beloved person and most respected person. But at the same time, if they get a free shot, nobody wants to take more of a free shot than your athletes on you.
No doubt. How have you, so you said you've been there 16 years and you've been able to improve the weight room, get your toys, build a staff, all those types of things. How have you gone about grabbing resources? I mean, I would imagine just like most places, most of my career, I had, $2,000, annual budget. I had to fight for every single thing. How have you gone about trying to get the stuff that you need to do your job?
So that $2,000 budget you have is $2,000 more than I got.
Yeah.
I don't have an annual budget. So over the years, I take a little bit whenever I can, and I try to, pick my spots. Going from 2 platforms to 16 platforms, I've taken in a lot of free equipment. If my AD at the time, whoever it was, and I've gone through, I'm on my 4th AD now, comes up and goes, hey, I got a couple extra $1,000. Do you have a list? I have that list ready to go.
Right.
So that I don't know how to go get a quote. I kind of have a running thing in my head. Like, okay, if I have a little bit of money, what can I do here? Our kinesiology department here on campus at Laverne has been unbelievable. They gave me $12,000 last year. So I got the new rig that I have in the weight room even though it takes up more space, it has more usable, workable room for me and the training that we need to do. Here's a fun fact. I've had more stuff donated to me by a professor on this campus than I have ever seen. She has given me, and this is no lie, coach, over 25 kettlebells.
Wow.
She's given me sandbags. She gave me a 25-pound medicine ball yesterday. So it's stuff like that one of the bars in the weight room is probably from the 90s. I have bumper plates that were from the 90s. So you just kind of accumulate stuff over time. The Atlas stones that I have were donated from a CrossFit gym closing.
Yep.
So I try to take things when I can get them and people offer, or I'm always looking for a deal. Hey, if I can, if there's a sale, it maybe perform better for their bands. I will go to my AD. Hey, we need some bands. They're on sale. So I kind of pick my time wisely. I know when things are coming up. Right. I try to plan ahead. I know when our yearly budget comes around, so I know kind of when to go ask for things. The hard one, coach, is professional growth.
Yeah.
Because, when you're at a 4-year school, you want to go to clinics, you want to go to conferences. So picking my spots when I can go to things, what's local, being in LA in Southern California, there's something probably almost every other weekend or every month you can go to listen to somebody talk.
Right.
You know, and when Dose got Athletes Acceleration to come out here to my place, I was like, you kidding me? I get a free clinic for a weekend? Like, I'll do whatever you need me to do.
Right.
So I try to take advantage. And then, Coach, I'll be honest, I go visit. I've been – every year I flip-flop back and forth between going, like, to UCLA or USC to see what they're doing. I spend a day there. I'll go to other colleges. I was down at Mater Dei High School a couple weeks ago. Every time I go home to San Luis Obispo, I go to Cal Poly to see my buddy Chris Holder, see what he's doing. So I'm always looking for an excuse to go somewhere. You know, last year I went to Hawaii with my family on vacation. I went to UH for a day. I met Coach Efferman. I met Coach Reynolds. Watched them train for a day. So I will not take any – I will always take an opportunity to go watch somebody work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's critical. That's a – I just posted today on social media that site visits is one of the best ways to go about learning anything, because anybody can say anything in a clinic setting. But when you actually go watch them work, that's a whole learning – different type of learning.
Well, Coach, don't you feel like there's coaching cues, right? You can have a really good coaching cue, but that cue applies to one or two people. But when I go watch a coach in a room full of athletes, I want to hear what you're saying to the kid that's not listening. I want to watch how you're interacting. What motivation things are you using in person? Like, how's when I walk in your facility, what does it feel like? What do I get from your athletes? How engaging are they? Like, I want to watch you coach. I want to watch you, the art of coaching. I want to see all that stuff. And the reality is we get so much more out of that interaction with somebody than you do in an hour long talk.
Agreed.
Because you can get more questions asked, answered.
Yeah. Well, those are the pain points. The pain points aren't necessarily creating the programs and the set rep school protocols. It's what do you get to do when you have that athlete that doesn't pay attention, or an athlete skipping reps in the back corner, or, you know, what's the message at the beginning of the workout to get them motivated to go?
Exactly.
You know, those are all the things that, you know, that when you go back to, like you said, the art of coaching, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And so important. Another thing I think that you said there that I want to make sure everybody hears is that you were ready. You're ready, you know, and I think when you're out of school or you're at a program, and this has been 99% of where I've been, where, you know, you don't have what you need, but you're continuing to need to ask for that. Being ready when you have opportunity to make an ask is key. So that means doing the legwork of knowing what you need, what's a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan. What does it cost? What are three quotes? What's a good price so you can be on the lookout for good deals? You know, when you know that those bands normally cost $40 and you're going to be able to get them for $20, well, that's a significant savings and a good argument to bring up with your athletic director or whatever. And you know, I always go back to one, you know, Heather Like, who was an AD at Eastern Michigan. She had a, you know, great thing where she'd come down and she'd be like, if your office is messed up, if the weight room is dirty, if every time I ask you what you want to have, you know, you have to say, you know, you don't really know, you'll get back to me. Well, then why would I give you money? Why would I put resources here? Because it's obviously not being taken care of and you don't have a plan. You know, and she didn't say that to me, and she was saying to me and that she was glad that I always had those things. But I think that's what happens with a lot of coaches, is they get so used to not having money or having resources that they're like, they just kind of, you know, kind of give up.
Coach, isn't it, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but isn't it interesting how if you let someone else tell you your worth, you'll never find out what you're really worth. You have to know your worth as a strength coach. ADs aren't going to come in here and pat you on the back all the time. There's sometimes you have to go and present things to them and be ready. And I always think it's really, really important. I tell my coaches all the time, like, you always have to have a plan.
Yeah.
You got a plan, even for a lift. Like, let's say you come in and you start something, it's not going right. Okay, what's plan B? You, in your head, you have to have a plan for what's next. And then I've been very blessed, Coach, okay? Two of my last GAs, the last couple of GAs, are both head strength coaches in my conference.
Wow.
Joe Buckley's down at Redlands. Mike Senyo's over at Whittier. And I always told him when they left, I said, listen, guys, you want to be 2 to 3 GAs ahead, because you never – a GA isn't a paid employee, which means right. that you could have him, and all of a sudden one day he's going to be offered a full-time job and he's gone.
Yep.
You've got to have the next guy ready to go, right? Next man up type thing. So always be two coaches away from having something ready. But if you do that in all aspects of your job, you'll always have a plan for something. And, you know, your athletes, even though they're college kids and they do these random off-the-wall things, they notice that you're always prepared.
Right.
And they always feel comfortable knowing that you're always going to have something ready for them, no matter what it is.
Yeah, there's comfort in that for sure. You know, and players will recognize that if you're always spastic or you're bouncing off the walls or you're flying off the handle with reactions, you know, they're going to see that. And a lot of times they're going to emulate that when things happen to them.
Absolutely. You know?
Or they'll respond the other way when you have it all cool, calm, cool, and collected. I mean, they'll recognize that and appreciate it.
Yes.
One of the things that I really respect about you is, you know, you're a single dad. You got two great boys. You know, they're a major part of what you do on a daily basis. You know, your son was an internet sensation, you know, a year ago or so, but you know, the big thing is that you have found a way to make sure your kids are part of, you know, I mean, this job is demanding and the job is a job, you know, it's a 14, 16 hour job and it is what it is a day, you know, so you can either be absent for 14, 16 hours or you'll find a way to include your kids. And, you know, your kids are working out with the team. Sometimes they're sleeping in your office. They're hanging out. And I always say that coaches' kids, you know, it is a sacrifice to be a coach's kid or be a parent of a kid when you're a coach. But they also have a tremendous amount of opportunity to be around a very diverse, eclectic group of people that can, you know, that are going to be future leaders in their communities that they're growing up around. And so I'd ask you to kind of talk to and encourage anybody else that's listening about how you've included your kids and why that's so important to you.
I heard this a long time ago that any male can make a baby, but it takes a man to raise one. And yeah. So along with my dad being a career Marine, he was also a high school teacher and a football coach at my high school. And so my earliest memories are being at football practice and being in the weight room from the time I can remember anything and just being around those guys and being around all that stuff. And it, every day I wanted to go be with my dad. I wanted to go hang out with dad at football. I wanted to go in the weight room. And I, you know, when I got old enough to ride my bike down to the high school, it's a 2 mile ride. I would ride down there. I would hang out with my dad. I'd be in the office. You know, Coach McKeefer, I can remember sitting there on game after games on Friday nights, going through his desk looking for stuff that the athletes had left in his classroom. You know, so it's, and then growing up in that area and being around, I've always been drawn to coaches and gotten like leaders in the military, the two kind of people that I look at for things.
Yeah.
When I got separated from my ex-wife, I remember my assistant at the time, I'd say, hey, man, I got to miss tomorrow because I got the kids. And it was the first day of spring or the second day of spring. And I said, okay, I got to take him to school. So I'll see you when I get in. He's like, yeah, coach, I got it. So I came in, and this is no knock on him, but I think as strength coaches, we have so much pride in what we do with our athletes.
Yeah.
And I said, how'd it go? And he got, wasn't that good. And I literally went, okay, well, I'm done. Kids are now coming in with me every day. Like I can't do this.
Right.
So that I learned very, very quickly, coach, to be uber organized, meaning that lunches are made for the next day. Breakfast is made for the next morning. Homework is done. We are in bed at a certain time.
Right.
And it's been since, let me see, gosh, John has just turned 7. So it's almost been 5 years of going on and doing this. And, you know, coach, like anything else, they're young kids. There's days that they complain about it more than others. But the reality is once I get them here, they're eating breakfast and my assistants start showing up. And then the football players start showing up, whatever sport, they're playing the whole time. They think it's absolutely incredible.
Right.
And my kids both love being around the athletes. I can't tell you how many cool stories I have of being in the dugout for baseball games, sideline of football. I'm going to tell you something. The sideline of a football game is the best place to grow up.
Yeah.
Because there is so much going on. It is so intense.
Right.
You learn very quickly how to be. And my youngest literally walks up and down the sideline with me, and he's into the game. He wants to know what's going on. He knows what down it is and who's coming on and who's coming off. And he's helping me keep the guys back. And he loves it. And then my oldest loves to hang out with the athletic training staff. So he's helping do the water. It's honestly like you have kids.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you'd want to raise them.
No,
I just, I'm not the end all be all for anybody, but I'm going to tell you this. I turned down a lot of opportunities to stay close to my children, to keep working at a place that I went to school that I love.
Yep.
And to have them around. And, you know, now I, like tonight, I have Little League practice. I have Little League practice tonight. I have Little League practice tomorrow night. We got Taekwondo tomorrow night. I have really embraced the role of a father for no other reason than it's just I get to be around my kids. And I think that we don't have enough good male role models doing that today.
Great.
And I see it with a lot of my student athletes. I want them to see that, hey, you can be a dad, you can have a job, but you still have a responsibility to be a father, to right. raise young men, to treat women correctly, to act correctly, to look a person in the eye when you talk to them and introduce yourself. Those things are starting to get lost.
Yeah, great. Now,
with that being said, me and my two little boys, we're Team Durant. Nobody has more fun than us. I treasure the 15-minute car ride after the morning workout to school.
Right.
Where we talk about, you know, they've all asked me, Dad, how do you think workout went? What did you guys like? Well, what did you think how today went? Well, I thought so-and-so should have listened better. They're learning at a very young age how to listen and how to be in that environment. When my kids go to school, and I have a whole psychology thing I could do on this, but when we roll into school at 7:40, 7:50 in the morning, they've been up for 4 hours.
Right.
And they're completely awake. They're aware of everything. I have never had in one parent-teacher conference any of the teachers say, God, your kids are tired. Young kids are so resilient.
No question.
And so I've taken that and now working with my little leaguers that I coach, it is so much fun to be around them. It's cathartic for me as a coach because you go from dealing with college kids all day who can get lethargic and complain about this or that, whatever. These little league kids, the fact that you're there to help them, they think that's the greatest thing in the world.
Right.
And that's all. This is a whole other talk show for another day, but I do a lot of the agility drills that with my college kids, the play base tagged, I do with the little kids. They think that's the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So it is, it's fun, coach. And I get to do this. I don't look at it as an I have to. I look at it as an I get to. And I am so blessed to have the job that I have, to have my children around. You know, at some point, Dad's going to stop being cool.
Yeah, right.
And I know that, right? Because we all went through that. Whatever we do together. So, you know, both my kids can surf. We go surfing. Both my kids, we go mountain biking. We go do this. We do it all together, the three of us.
Right.
And coach, I couldn't imagine it any other way. And it's really sad to say this, but I'm man enough to admit this. After I got divorced, I became a much better father.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is what it is. It is what it is.
No question. Well, I think I talk about this quite a bit, but you're going to go through seasons of life and coaching, you know, where it is going to be skewed. There's no such thing as 50-50, you know, 50% at work and 50% at home. It just doesn't happen in this field, you know, but if you're 80% at home at work or 20% at home or whatever, you can be 100% present where you're at, you know, and I think that's the key is, you know, including your kids as much as you can. And you've done it as good as anybody I've ever been around, of having them be a part of the process of being a part of of work. And like you said, you've been selective in where you work and how you do it so that they can be involved. But then also, you know, instead of going home and getting on the computer and doing more work or watching TV or doing whatever, I mean, like you said, you're disciplined. You got your kids in bed at a certain time. You know, you're going to baseball practice instead of watching whatever reality TV show's on or whatever, you know. And that's, you know, I think that's the message here is including your kids as much as you can, but then turn around and it's a sacrifice to be a good dad or a good mom. And
you know, we have this very small window to affect their lives.
Yeah.
Positively or negatively, because the negative stuff can last forever.
Yeah.
The positive of, you know, the word love, coach, it's thrown around way too much. But when you love something, you want to include it. You want to make sure that it reaches its full potential, whether it's your job, your life. And so when I say things like, I love my children, my love for them is not seeing them now. It's making sure that when they're in their 20s, they've got an extra foot forward to be a productive human being in this on this planet. And whatever they decide to do, you know, I get my athletes to ask me all the time, hey, what's baby John going to do? Whatever he wants. Yep. If my son grows up and he wants to be whatever, I want him to get up every single day and know that you have to get up with excitement in your life to go be great at something. Yep. Whether it's being a gardener, a coach, a banker, a teacher, whatever. I do got to tell one quick little story. My dad juggled a lot of things growing up, being a Marine, a coach, and a teacher at the high school. And so there were Friday nights. My dad would coach a football game. And where we live in California is right in the middle of the state. 3.5 hours from San Francisco area, 3.5 hours from the LA area. Well, my dad was working down at Coronado. That's a 6-hour drive with no traffic. Okay. Jeez. So he would coach a full, first of all, he'd teach a full week, coach a football game, leave right after the football game, drive to San Diego, do his Marine Corps weekend, drive back home on a Sunday, go in, do some film study. And by the way, my high school, I've never seen more coaches be more organized for a football game. And then get up the next morning, be in early for work, coach and work a full week, not complain, not – I would never hear my old man complain about these things, and then go out and coach on Friday.
Wow.
And so when he retired from teaching, he had this old lunchbox. And it was an old lunchbox that he got me when I was like 7 from Disneyland. I still have this. It's in my office. And I said, Dad, I want your lunchbox, because what that represents to me is that no matter what is being asked of you or put in front of you for your family or your job, I never saw you complain about anything. My dad never took a day off.
Wow.
You know, how many times have you been in an off season with, let's say, the football team, wherever you're at, coach, and all of a sudden kids are sick and you're like, I know why you're sick, because you're not sleeping, you're not eating, you're burning the candle at both ends.
Right.
But here's my dad doing those same things. But it's almost like he said, I'm not going to get sick because I have too many people counting on me.
Yeah.
And that, growing up, that was my example.
That's awesome.
And so now I've taken that and I try to use that with my athletes and my own two little boys. So we, you know, that stuff, nothing can stop us. I want resilient people in my life.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. What's
sure.
the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Oh, God. I've been around some great coaches from all different sports. And one that sticks with me, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from Robert Prince, who's a football coach. And he told me, I was in a Chinese food restaurant in San Francisco. I was a very young coach. And he said, if you take one thing away from every single coach you ever meet over the span of a coaching lifetime, whether it's from pros all the way down to high school and youth, you'll be a better coach. And from that point forward, in my one moment of clarity that night, I was like, wow. And so every time I meet someone, you know, when I got a chance to meet you a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I'm going to walk up and introduce Coach McHugh, introduce myself and just see what I can soak up. And so whoever is speaking on whatever topic, I try to take one thing away.
It's awesome. I agree with that. Give us a book, app, and website.
All right. Book. I just finished reading Make Your Bed. It took me 2 nights. That was a great book. I would have to say though, coach, I'm a huge mental guy. You know, the 15 inches between the ears trumps what happens below the neck. If you want to read a great book about learning to deal with athletes and mental toughness, it's called The New Mental Toughness Training for Sport. And I got that from Coach Dose. It's an old book. It'll cost you $10 on Amazon. I do have to make one quick pub for, it's called Living with a Seal.
Yeah.
And that was a coach. That's I'm going to tell you something. It changes the way you look at everything.
Yeah.
So those two. Website, I'm going to go with my guy, coachdose.com. I think, like you talked about, his creativity. I'm speaking later this month in Boston at the Athletes Acceleration. I'm talking about developing great work capacity in your athletes. And I'll be talking about the non-traditional tools and how we implement everything here at the college. So Coach Dose is my guy. I believe in him and everything he does. And having the athletes that we've had to work with, and you got a chance to coach a couple of them with the Bengals, we're all about developing that great work capacity. We're going to get stronger. We're going to get faster. We're going to get more powerful. So it's how do we fill up that bucket with great work capacity. Anyway, go to coachdose.com.
Yep.
Website. Lately, God, I spend a lot of time looking at a lot of different stuff. I'd love to say YouTube, because you can find almost anything on YouTube. Yeah. But that was CoachDose.com would be on my website. App, I go with Tabata Pro. It's an app about how to set up different timers and intervals. I use it with my college athletes. I use it with my mixed martial artists. And I use it with my kids. Yeah. And I use it on myself when I go mountain biking coach. I do my 30-30s. I throw my Pandora on there. And I do a 20-round 30-30 up one of the bigger climbs in the area as my conditioning for the day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, man, I get a chance to do a lot of these episodes and speak a lot and meet a lot of people. And it's always refreshing to meet somebody that's got the same value system, puts in the same energy, same effort, has the same amount of pride in what they do. And you do that in spades, man. And just really appreciate you being a great host while we're out there. But just more importantly, the way that you're going about your business and how you're making an impact on your kids' life, on the other people's kids' lives that you get to train and coaches that you work with. So appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, man.
Coach, thank you so much. Like I said, I've been listening to these for a while. It's an honor to be on. And the next time you come to California, we're going mountain biking, my brother. Okay? Count on it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.